Cool. All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Grisha, a compulsive overeater, and nice to be in your meeting. I am, let's see, a little bit about me. My abstinence date is January 22nd, 1998. So I've been abstinent for 26 years, and I'm coming up on my 27th year of abstinence. So that to me is like one, it's the biggest miracle of my life. I'm really grateful for that. I am a 100 pounder, so my top weight was over 300 pounds, about 320 pounds. And yeah, so I usually like to frame my share using the steps, but I probably run out of time, so I'll at least start that way. It's hard to kind of get 20, 57 years of life and 26 years of abstinence into 20 minutes, but I'll do my best. First step for me was very easy. I knew from a very early age that I was powerless over food. Like, I started eating compulsively and comforting myself with food when I was about 12 or 13. My dad was ill and eventually died of a rare illness as a result of being in World War II and prisoner of war and things. So I started, there was a period where I started eating because I was depressed, stressed out. We moved to a new neighborhood. I'm the sixth child, and my older siblings slowly, got married, moved away. And so I was kind of raised like an only child with a really cranky mom and a father who was dying. And that, so I comforted myself with food, and I was someone who would just eat a giant breakfast. My dad would give me money to buy two lunches at school. I would eat on when I came home and just sit in front of the television and binge until dinner, and then binge at dinner, and then binge after dinner, and then go to bed. Anyway, you get the idea. And so then I became the fat kid at school, which had presented new problems. Part of my story is drugs and alcohol, started drinking and doing drugs, and then moved out of my mom's house and in with a brother who was a partier like me. And that's where I really the compulsive overeating just really took off, and drug and alcohol. So at my worst, in my worst state, I was over 300 pounds, chain smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day, drinking and drugging every day, credit card debt up to $40,000. And I was just a wreck. And then what happened initially was I got sober, and I went to a convention in New York. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I went up to New York for the weekend for a conference. And my first workshop was out of the bar and into the refrigerator. And that was my story. It's like, quit drinking, eat more. Quit smoking, eat more. Credit card limit reached, eat more. That was my solution to everything, was eat more. And anyway, I worked the steps in the program and had a sponsor and did service for 8 years. And I moved from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. And I thought that was going to probably solve the eating problem, because I thought, well, people are going to be healthier here. And there's, it's the weather's better and there's not winter. And anyway, it followed me right along. And what happened was, I was out at fellowship in the other program, and there was a person there who watched me do my regular thing, which was, I order a giant portion for dinner at fellowship, eat it in 5 minutes, and then wait for the first person who says, "Oh, I'm stuffed." And then I just trade my empty plate for their half-eaten plate and finish it for them, and I would do that as much as I could. So there was someone at the table at that one night that said, pulled me aside and said, "Hey, I saw the way you eat like I eat." And he said he was basically, he had been in OA, abstinent, lost 100 pounds, but relapsed and gained it all back and was going back to OA. And he said, "Do you want to come with me?" And I said, "Yeah." So I knew I was a compulsive overeater from very early age. I tried a million commercial diets and everything, and everything you can imagine, to try to control or change my obesity, and nothing worked. And so I didn't have a lot of faith, but I decided to go with him. And it's weird to, have worked steps all that time and not be able to apply them to food. Like I was, doing a really good job working my program, but it wasn't working with food. So anyway, second step, I went to that first OA meeting. It was the lifeboat meeting in San Francisco. There were like 100 people there, a giant like tea service table and literature table and greeters. And it was a speaker discussion and a positive pitch meeting, really super high energy. And I just got, I caught the AA bug, I mean, the OA bug. I just was like, this is, I want this. And I'm really grateful to that friend who 12-stepped me into the room because he also became my number one resource in the beginning. He's like my translator to how you work the 12 steps in OA. I slowly over, I mean, just like as I stayed abstinent, became abstinent, stayed abstinent, it was great because he was like about 20 or 30 pounds ahead of me. So every time he lost 20 pounds, he'd give me his, he'd give me like his size 48 pants. Then I'd get his size 46 pants. And then I'd get it. So he was like giving me his hand-me-downs until we both got down to like, a 34 waist, which for me, I hadn't been a 34 since I was a teenager, probably, yeah, anyway. That was like my second step experience where I saw people abstinent, happy, in a normal body size, and I did it. For me, step three was being willing to follow a food plan. I'm not I have a little bit of a struggle with God. I was raised by a Catholic, devout Catholic, very conservative mom who made us go to church and CCD on Sundays, and there's a lot of like God is watching shame and guilt going on. She didn't go to church though, which I thought was odd. So I didn't have like deep spirituality modeled for me. It was more just like guilt and shame and you better watch out. So when I came into program, I had to lean into the group as my higher power. And like they say, GOD, group of drunks, good orderly direction. Higher power. So for me, OA is definitely a higher power. Together we can do what we can't do alone. And for me, my third step basically became staying on my food plan no matter what. That's my tattoo, no matter what. It's like my first food plan was three meals a day with no sugar, and that took a lot of getting used to. I was somebody who ate around the clock, giant quantities and lots of sugar and different substances. So my first food plan, I just started right away with that friend. He helped me. He showed me the old gray sheet. He had like a triple photographed old copy with coffee stains on it of the gray sheet. And I was like, I can't do that. That's too intense for me. But he did it. And so he was ahead of me. A lot of far ahead of me on physical recovery. But got a sponsor, started working the steps, stayed on my food plan one day at a time, one meal at a time. And over time, my meal chip my food plan has changed. It's gotten sort of cleaner and leaner and more sane. And if you had told me on the first day of abstinence that how I would be eating today, I would have not believed you. So I don't eat sugar for my food plan, not for everyone. I don't eat sugar, flour, grains. I eat produce and protein, and I weigh and measure things. I have quantity limits, and that worked for me. I lost over 120 pounds, and I've maintained it. And more importantly, the obsession was lifted. I describe myself as comfortably abstinent. I don't, like it says in the promises, like I don't struggle, I don't fight. It's like something that's been lifted from me. So step three for me is definitely like for me, God's will or whatever's will is to be abstinent. Like no higher power, no good person on the planet would want or off the planet would want me binging and living as a morbidly obese person and suffering, So I have to, I had a sponsor who said, "You might not know what God's will is for you, but you know what it isn't." So I know that God's will is not for me to suffer with obesity and food obsession. Step four and five, I had done them in other programs, and so I had my list of character defects, and I did another fourth and fifth step around, how food, how I harmed other people with my food, my obesity, my, I basically, one of the things I really struggled with was silent scorn, unrealistic expectations, and self-righteous indignation. Those were my big ones. And so I had a lot of expectations, especially around romantic interests and things that ended up like if somebody hurt my feelings, I just wouldn't speak to them again. Or I would shut people out of my life, or not show up for friends because basically I was afraid. I was shut down emotionally and physically. I was, I felt too big physically to get on planes and boats and, do things that other people were active people were doing. So anyway, I worked on that list. And for me, the one of the big kind of miracle parts of the new of OA program for me was step six and seven. I was shown by a sponsor this specific way to work six and seven because in my other program it was kind of a blip on the map. It wasn't super entailed. So what I was shown is for every character defect that I had from my fourth and fifth step, I had to write about one, how it saved my life, the character defect, how it saved me in the past and helped me. And then the second question is, well, now how has it outlived its usefulness and how is it hurting me? And then the third question was, if it were lifted, how would I had to visual you have to visualize how you would act or behave or like what you would do, what it would look like. And that was really interesting surgery. Trying to, like I had this roadmap, like, okay, if I decide I want to, if I'm mad at someone and I want to silent scorn them, well, this is what's good about that. This is what's bad about that. And this is what I have to do if I don't want that. Like I knew what I had to do. I knew what the next, I knew more instantly. I knew more instantly what the next right action is or what the wrong action would be. I didn't always follow the good, the good way, because like my dad used to say to me over and over, some people live and learn and some people just keep on living. When are you going to learn? So I had to, I'm someone that has to have be in pain a lot repeatedly before I'm actually willing to do something about it. So that six and seven was really important for me in my OA recovery. And then steps eight and nine, again, I had made a lot of amends in my other program. I like that OA puts us on the amends list. I hurt myself with food. I really limited my I limited my life. My life got small when I was obese and full of shame and food obsession and and I did things and even after I was abstinent and lost all the weight, like I harmed my body. I have stretch marks and loose skin and I have the battle scars, as we call them, of morbid obesity, and that and I can't afford surgery, and even if I hit the lottery, I'm not sure I would get it because it's so intense, the plastic surgery to correct those things. But so yeah, it requires a lot of acceptance. And the way that I make amends to myself is to stay abstinent no matter what. Excuse me. So yeah, my daily amends to myself is to stay abstinent. And if I'm abstinent and working a spiritual program, hold on a second, I'm gonna mute and cough. Got a tickle in my throat. I'm automatically being a better person in the world, and so I'm making living amends to everyone around me at work and at school. And I had a sponsor who said, if you stay abstinent and sober one day at a time, and you work the program, like sobriety will creep into all areas of your life. You'll go to work in a sober way. You'll eat in a sober way. You'll spend money in a sober way. You'll show up in relationships in a sober way. And I feel like that's that. Has been true for me for sure. And then one of the other big amends that I was really, I'm really grateful that I was able to make was to my mom. I mentioned before we had a really crunchy relationship, and I turned 40 and I was working the steps, and I all of a sudden had this awakening around my mom. I realized, oh wow, she was 40 when she had me. I was an accident. She had five other kids 9 years before I was born. She's very Catholic. A lot of my siblings were, all of my siblings and me were heavy partiers. I had a sister who worked as a Playboy bunny. I had a sister who got pregnant, dropped out of school. Everyone ran off and got married. People were living in sin. My mom was like, and my dad was an alcoholic and having a fatal illness, and she had chronic pain. She was in chronic pain and working full time for probably 30 years before, knee replacement became a thing and she got her knees replaced. So all of a sudden my heart just burst open for her. And I was like, no wonder, I get it. And I began changing my relationship with her, writing her daily, these little notes and comic strip things, and calling her and going home for the summers and things. So, a lot of I we, by the end of her life, we were really patched up nicely. So I'm really grateful that that happened, and it wouldn't have happened without the steps because I was stuck in resentment and judgment, and And then step 10, I'm running out of time here. Step 10, I had a sponsor who showed me this specific way to work it, which was every night before bed, I would hand write out the third step prayer, all my resentments, anger, all these, whatever was going on, and then hand write out the seventh step prayer. And then I call her every morning and read the whole thing. And basically, what that did was get me out of vagueness. There was no longer, I suddenly understood the patterns in my life. It wasn't vague anymore. It was like, I know why I'm acting like this. I know why I'm not speaking to these people. I know why I'm hating my job. And it's like all this stuff started to really like churn and bubble and change. And that year was pretty wild. It was like I quit my job. I went back to school. I changed careers. I got into a romantic relationship and moved in with my partner. And like all this stuff happened, and it trained me that I can't just, it's like I can talk about my problems, but I got to figure out why, what the solution is. It really helped me get to a more solution-based recovery, to not just sit in my problems and be a victim, to like really use the steps to tease out what's really happening and what can I do to change it, With a minute left, I just say my 11th step, mentioned before, kind of a higher power thing for me was difficult, but I was at a meeting and someone said, if you're not praying and meditating every day, you're not working all the steps. And I took that to heart, and I saw this Oprah Winfrey Deepak 21-day meditation challenge, and I signed up. And what do you know? Now I've been like 10 years of really like daily meditation practice. I read, oh, also, there someone said, your daily prayer could just be reading the daily readers. And that's what I consider my prayer. So I read 2 AA, 2 OA, 2 Al-Anon, and a few Buddhist books every morning. I get up at 4 a.m. I make my breakfast. I cannot eat my breakfast until I also make my lunch because where I work, I have to bring an abstinent lunch. And then I eat my breakfast and then I sit down and do all this spiritual practice, read all these daily readers. I send out a Buddhist message to a bunch of friends. I meditate and I sometimes add writing into that. And then I also send out a grata text. And I trade grata texts with my sponsor and some other friends and family, where I list, anywhere from like 1 to 10 to 15 things that I'm grateful for. And I have a really negative bias, like my mom did, and so I have to really work on being grateful. It's an action for me, is becoming grateful. So, And then the 5 seconds, the 12th step is just, being so grateful for what I received from this program and trying to give it back with sponsees. And I work with a sponsor and we read program literature and talk about what we're reading and share experience, strength, and hope. And then, meetings. My home group is the daily 7 a.m. San Francisco Zoom meeting. It's great. We read from literature every day. And I do service at that meeting. I miss the 50 different in-person meetings we used to have, but I've adapted to Zoom, and I did just go to a new in-person meeting that they're starting, so I feel like it's part of my recovery to go give back and be in a room with newcomers and try to help extend a hand. So anyway, thanks for listening, and I'm looking forward to your shares.